Hello and welcome to Architecture Masters at Home, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture.
After I have the experience to teach, I think it's the same. I think people is people. The individual is individual. The difference in between the individual is much more than the influence from the like which country you come from or like the cultural things, I think. My name is Sheng Yuan Huang. I'm the principal architect of a field office in Taiwan.
On the program this week, we're joined by Shen Yuan Huang, founder of Field Office Architects. Shen Yuan was born in Taipei and initially studied architecture at Tsinghua University in Taichung, Taiwan's second city, where he graduated in 1986. Taiwan, officially the Republic of China, was governed under martial law until 1987, which marked the start of a transition to more democratic freedoms. It was perhaps this early desire for greater freedom that led him in 1989 to the United States, where he gained his master's degree in architecture at Yale. He stayed on in the States and worked for Eric Owen Moss Architects in Los Angeles and taught at North Carolina State University before returning to Taiwan in 1993, having failed to find the freedom he was looking for. Shen Yuang founded Field Office Architects in 1994 in Yilan, a rural town in northeastern Taiwan, where the practice has pursued mainly community-driven projects. Indeed, the vast majority of the practice's work is extremely local, with virtually all taking place within a 30-minute drive. Despite this, Shen Yang's work has been widely exhibited internationally, including at the 2018 Venice Biennale, with the exhibition Living with Sky, Water and Mountain, Making Places in Yilan. My colleague Andre Holmquist visited Taiwan in February with support from a British Council grant. You can find Andre's write-up in the views pages of the LFA website. Last month I spoke to Xuan Yuan down the line from Taiwan, where I started by asking him to give us an introduction to where the practice was based.
Okay, so basically the whole Taiwan, the west side is a kind of a metropolitan area. Most of the population on the west side. We have a central mountain. It's occupied more than, I think it's around like 60% is mountain. And this island, we have a very tall mountain. It's around like almost 4,000 meters tall. So we have a very various landscape, and on the east side is facing the Pacific Ocean. So which is the east side of Taiwan is relatively beautiful. It's clean and facing the Pacific Ocean, not much population. So it means like we have a very casual life here. But Yilan is the field office space. Is very close to the capital of Taipei. So Taipei on the west north corner of Taiwan and on the head, and Yilan is the northeast corner of Taiwan. So from Taipei, the capital of Taiwan, we have a tunnel. It takes around like 50 minutes by bus. You can approach to Yilan, and you see the Pacific Ocean. It's beautiful. Huh?
Okay. So you're very close then to the urban metropolis, but slightly more of a rural location for the practice.
Yeah, because the mountain is pretty tall. Snow mountain, right? There's a snow mountain and the central mountain, which is kind of isolated, the Yilan Delta. So Yilan is a delta. We have a major creek. It's called Lanyang Creek. So it's a plain. It's an agricultural area. So it's around like 460,000 people in Lanyang Plain. But in Taipei metropolitan, it's around like 4 million to 5 million people.
My colleague Andre visited you, I think, just before COVID struck. And we architects in Britain, in London, are all stuck working from home. But we're talking to you from your office. Just talk us through how Taiwan is managing with COVID. I can see your whole office, you're all back working in the office.
We are very luckily Taiwan, the government find out, you know, we know that China possibly will not give a right information. So in a very early time, the Taiwan's government already beginning to prepare. So it means like even until now, we only have 450 people get infected. And recently it's already 80 days, no any single person got sick. So it means like we basically, our daily life almost didn't be influenced not much. But of course, Taiwan has a lot of connection to the international world. So a lot of business and tourism, of course, influenced. But like we are in a country area, so we're almost
no change.
Yeah, almost no change. And especially most of our projects are public projects. So this means so the government in this kind of a situation, they need to investment in more, even more projects. So we are busy, and we work in a very normal time, the situation. Yeah.
Okay. And then just tell us a little bit about the practice at the moment. How many of you are, you described yourself earlier as chief teacher. Tell me about how many people are in the practice. How big is the practice?
So we have around, our office is setting in 1994, until now it's around like 25 years old. So we beginning from one person, and two, and three, and four. So now we have, it's around like 30 people. But we're kind of more like a club. So people in and out, sometimes they go back home to working, they're taking care of the parents and things when they are young, and then they come back again. It's, for example, the lady, Adu, and she's working in US just few months ago, but because the COVID case, she come back. So it's like we are here, is just like a home. You can always come back. Yeah, just so that's the, yeah.
That's lovely. It's a really nice way of describing it as a club that people. It's I think people talk about a collective sometimes in London, a loose affiliation of people who can come and go and collaborate. And you were talking then about colleagues working in the States. We might just jump back to your time, maybe in the States, in America, that you studied initially in Taiwan, and then did you study in Yale?
Yeah, well, I graduated from Donghai University in Taichung in Taiwan, and go to study in Yale to finish my master's degree, and then I worked for Eric Olmos in Los Angeles for 2 years, and go to North Carolina State to teach. But I don't think it's not much different. And just, you know, when I was in the university time, the Taiwan is still under the martial law control. The purpose I go study abroad possibly is to looking for freedom. It's more than the knowledge of architecture. You know, it's just most of the professors, actually Taiwan is influenced by US a lot. So when where I educated in undergraduate, basically we, a lot of our professors, actually they graduated from US. So when I go to US, I didn't feel so much different.
Okay. That's interesting, the search for freedom a little bit by moving to the States. But certainly looking at, you talked about Eric Moss Architects, Eric Owen Moss Architects.
Moss, yeah.
A very slightly Frank Gehry style, seems quite, and Los Angeles, presumably quite a different feel to Elan. Just talk to us about that influence in the States.
You know, this is, yeah, fundamentally, we, you know, at that moment, we we feel our government at that moment, okay, it was just, we always listen to lies from the government. So, I also not trust all of the ethic or like all of the aesthetic, the influence from the Western society. Also, I just always worry about this is not a, it's something limited. So even I go to US, because I went to Yale, of course, it's kind of an elite place. So the reason go to Los Angeles, possibly also try to do something for resistance. Something is not like East Coast of US. But when I spend the time in Culver City, and I find out Eric is he's very, with a lot of courage. He only choose what he want to do. I'm saying like I try not to be influenced by the form system, but try to catch the spirit. He can exist what he want to do, which is in 1994, before that time in Taiwan, if you want to be architect, sounds like you don't have too much choices. So one kind of like commercial architects, and it's always looked like that way, and or otherwise you do the public project, possibly dealing with even worse, the all of the corruption and the bureaucracy. So, but my generation, so we are very lucky. I just go through the whole changes that when the Taiwan's approach to democracy system, and we're beginning to go through all of the, now it's totally different. Yeah.
And then you taught for a while, and you talked about North Carolina teaching in university. Yes. Just talk us.
But not really, because when I was in Taiwan, I said, I don't think I have ability to dealing with very complex, to be a very smart architect. Sounds like I don't have the ability. So everybody think I definitely will be the professor in the school, which is relatively simple. The life is simple and pure. But so I'm also curious about like what's the difference the United States students, what's the difference with the Taiwan students? But after I have the experience to teach, I think it's not, it's the same. I think people is people, and the individual is individual. The difference in between the individual is much more than the influence from which country you come from, or like the culture things. I think that's what I feel. Yeah.
That's really nice. People wherever you are.
Yeah.
So interested then to think about what made you started making a life for yourself, I guess, in America. What brought you back to Taiwan? This was 1993.
I came back to Taiwan, and the dream I try to go abroad is try to find what's the reality. And when I come back and I go through all of this, I find out, well, there are also a lot of trouble in this kind of magic United States, right? We believe it's a country of freedom, but they have a lot of troubles. Especially in 1992, I actually ran into the rioter in Los Angeles. Yes. And I will know all of the, I'm beginning to really feeling about the happiness you need to build by yourself. And so everywhere we have everywhere's problem. So I come back to the hometown. No, it's not hometown actually. It's like I born in Taipei City. And I find, I just try to figure out, well, if the, if architecture is not a progress or not, it's some fundamental things missing. So where I can really get the something to inspire me. So I remember when my classmate in the university time, he's coming from Yilan, which is I find out the dirt and the way the farmers, when they talk, the time they dealing with the climate, they wake up very early and they try to avoid the sunshine and the reason to facing the monsoon, and I find out that there are much more, how to say that, it's a gentle and a kind of a kindness for, it's accept more diverse, that the possibilities of life are so different. So I beginning to figure out possibly if we want to not separate our life with the architecture is only our the kind of a window if we could contribute or facing the world. So if we could live our life in a kind of a good way, or at least we never regret to spend our time in that way, possibly we will find out the new languages of architecture. So that's the beginning. I try to totally empty myself and I try to settle down and then not squeeze myself to any kind of system. It's just beginning to go to a little village and then settle down and then beginning our practice.
So you were 94 when you 1994 when you started the practice.
Yeah.
By yourself?
Yeah.
Originally? Just tell us about how the practice grew and how you started.
Oh, okay. In that year, I was 30 or 31. And actually, I traveled in Europe twice. Traveled many, many countries. Even I stay in Germany, Barcelona, or like the last time I stay in Europe, actually each place more than 1 month. So it kind of, I begin to have a study and teaching, and I have, so I could not like a tourist. I can really, really be just live like a European people there. So I come back to Taiwan, and I think at that moment I beginning to, I think I almost decided to just very relaxed to a kind of life. Don't hurry or rush, and I want to very, very slowly and try to learn the craftsmanship. At that time, I also teaching. At the beginning I came back to Taiwan, I also teaching. So the local young people come, the first staff, and then one of my students to beginning from an internship and so that's, we try to collect the furnitures from the villages, and then we paint our own office, and just step by step. And also I was invited to be a, how to say, the consultant for the government, the county government, to give a very young and very naive opinion. And I'm so surprised the head, the magistrate of the county actually like it. So I think so I'm beginning to feel the power of independency. So at that moment I'm more and more beginning to know I need to make everybody join to my life, still independent. It means like I don't want to have some existing
consensus.
Yeah, something like it. So I just maybe to be different is the fundamental requirement. It's like I ask myself, because that's the purpose I go abroad. And now as an architect, I find out I don't need to waiting for the commission. We could invent, because it's tons of things not many people to touch. For example, most of the settled down architects, they most of the time they're dealing with the projects in the lot. But the trouble of Taiwan is like a lot of space in between. Nobody care. So it means like all the individuals, just like people just take advantage on the piece of land. Nobody taking care. So I feel like why not we beginning from this point? So that's later you see we have a lot of projects one by one connected. For example, like just we'll be beginning from a basketball court, and then we have a water canal, and then we have this is all of these infrastructures. So that's a very in the very early beginning where I already feel a lot of interest to do that, which is also find the freedom to just architects is not you know it's not the profession is not be set by somebody. It's like we have ability to try to help to try to help the environment.
So there's a social always a social conscience to the work. From the beginning, some people well, it's interesting some people set up mm-hmm. their architecture practice as a really business focused practice. They want to get big projects to bring in money to do international work.
but maybe I just don't I very clearly I don't have this ability. So anyway, so it sounds like because my parents they are teachers. And I grew up in a very
okay. Yeah. Well, let's just explore that. I mean, I'm interested in what makes. We'll come on to some yeah. of the projects, and I'm interested to talk about the work of the practice. But jumping back, I'm always interested in what makes people think about becoming architects. You say your parents were yes, uh-huh. teachers.
When the, you know, just in my early stage, the you know, it's, I think it's common everywhere. The especially in the Oriental, the Asian the countries, people, it's a very competitive society. Everybody want to stand on, go through the examination to take a good position and you have a good job and to have the promise for the income, something like that. But, well, I feel I'm weak anyway. So every time I try to compete, I possibly will very easily to be the loose one. So why not? I just need to find I need to find a way to survive in a very open way. I think it's if the life is will not be cut in different sector, so we have many possibilities to just it's only to do things nobody want to do. It's already big enough and I can contribute a lot. And I find out so maybe, you know, I came back from abroad and also I born in Taipei City and I go into a local area, which is people will think you are outsider. But in that situation and which stimulate me to, well, if I try not to do anything most of people doing. So it means like I don't need to compete with anybody. I will be the person carry a lot of new possibilities. I help everybody, so everybody happy. And I'm not a serious confront to anybody, which make me possibly comfortable. So maybe this is at the beginning is very tricky way, yeah. But I enjoyed about a lot, yeah.
And then when did you sort of realize you were interested in the built environment? What was it that, I mean, when did you realize you wanted to be a,
yeah.
or did you know what architects did, or when did that?
Yeah. Well, if you grew up in Taiwan, you will find out most of the projects and all of the concrete things are everywhere. It doesn't look grow from the land. It's something alien. Because the system, the capitalism, the system just make things fast, efficient, and powerful, which occupy the most of our what we see. So I hate it. Actually, I hate it. It's just like we are be be pushed to be in a kind of a environment we didn't feel right. Just like I find out, because the architects, I believe they are not intended to do evil things. They are just, definitely there are some system wrong. There's something wrong. So I want to out of the system. So it means like, I think architects is not a too difficult job anyway. A lot of things are based on the common sense. So it means like architects could service everything by most of the common sense. But because most of the time the architects try not to allow the people to believe the common sense is very important. They want to be proficiency. So I just try to integrate the life to be the daily life or the professional life. So it means like I try to find a system. So we working and enjoy the life and at the same time.
So as a child, you're thinking about the world around you, about buildings going up very quickly, not being well built. And it's a rebellion against that, maybe, that makes you think, actually, things can be better and I can design something better than this. Was that the kind of almost a philosophical approach that led you into architecture?
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny. I even didn't think I can design better. It means like, in my experience, as when I'm in elementary school, to the junior high, senior high, I'm always the person to make the platform, and I always has, because I know I'm weak, so I'd better to have a good friend, so the friend has the different abilities, and we could work in more diverse possibilities, and we just are not limited by the competition. So it's the same logic. So when I come to a new place and I find out because I already see the whole is a big world, so I know Taiwan is not only like this. So I just try to elaborate the situation to be limited. Yeah.
So what's really interesting is that a lot of the practices work, all of the practices work is in Taiwan.
Yeah.
So all of your projects.
Yes.
But a lot of your outlook and your exhibitions, thinking about Venice and traveling, is a very international outlook to your work and having lived abroad, but a real focus on projects at home. Is there, are the two linked? Is there a, just talk us through that a little bit.
You know, as from my point of view, I'm not sure that my office people think that way, but that just like all of these are kind of accidental happen. So people from Europe, from United States, they like our projects but I'm not doing things to attract them. Most of the time, I think it's maybe it's still send out a message about freedom. It's like we are, most of our project actually is in a 30 minutes drive, which means I could like not limited by proficiency. I have the duty to understand that all of the detail related to everything. So it means like we have all of the resources from all of the possibilities. That's also, so for maybe the similar feeling. Well, we work in the same place. It means like I could get along and to be the companion. And after we do something, we could keep on taking care of the place. Because you know the system is just they usually push the things to be something. So always you are not well very happy. It's like, for example, like in Taiwan, we don't have the budget for maintenance, because the politician, they always wanted something new. So you need to be the company of the project, which means that it's better to be surrounded. But it doesn't mean our point of view is like the, you know, the possibilities to be a human, to be one of the animals in the world. I need to be not limited, and also I need a lot of knowledge or inspiration from everywhere. So it means like I'm very happy to have a lot of invitation for exhibitions. So every time when we're going to do the exhibition, the most just making a lot of friends with a lot of people deeply, because they always invited us and ask our very deeply questions, and we find out we are not alone. We are not the, you know, Taiwan is the history is a very kind of a sad history, but we are not alone. So it means like we go through all of the friendship making. We also get a lot of courage.
Okay, that's great. It's interesting. You'd see a lot of other practices on the back of the exhibitions and the traveling would be trying to push for work overseas. And it comes across to me as quite charming, the idea of maintaining your, it's a beautiful idea of all of your projects being 30 minutes away. I mean, it's in terms of quality of life and in terms of respect for the community.
Because one thing very maybe important is because we are a group of young people, maybe not young because they are from 20 to 50, so we have a 30 years difference, but they're very serious taking care of their life, and they have a lot of wisdom even from the heritage from their parents. They come in from different counties, and we're doing something not limited only in Yilan. So it's many people's thinking, and it's like it's not only me. So that's what you feel like is possibly there's a feeling of a very open and very seriously take the dealing with the earth, the water, the mountain, or something like that.
And you talked then a little earlier about almost being chief teacher, you know, the kind of collaborative approach to the practice. I mean, you'd be interested to talk us through how the practice works on projects and who brings in projects, how you work, what's a typical day like in the practice?
Okay. Well, myself, I'm just the one to go to swimming with my colleagues, or just that's and eating together. That's most of time. But and the projects, most of times like people they find out there are trouble, some environmental trouble in their community. They will try to tell in us. So we have because we have 30 people here, we can listen a lot of possibilities, and then we just, although we don't have the power to solve it immediately, but we try to remember. So it takes time. So we just not the timing. How to say that? I think our fundamental special abilities, because we are not limited by the schedule of the project. Basically, we see everything are constant, continuously. That's just like it's a process. So it means like all of the projects we put in our big map. And then we try to solve the problem. If we cannot do it at this moment, we do it later, we're waiting. So most of the time when people call me, say, well, I have this idea, can you do this for me? And then also I come back to the office, I just walk in the offices and murmur, say, well, if we could do this, maybe we could help or something like that. And usually after a few hours or sometimes a few days, and our colleagues will come to me and say, well, we already think about this guy now recently is more free, and maybe this lady just very sad recently. She needs something to do, and they will figure out who is the person could get involved with the new projects. And in that case, I feel, well, it's about time we're beginning to start a project. So that's... Mm-hmm.
So that's very entrepreneurial in terms of thinking about, or almost, you see this a little bit in other places, people who almost design, become clients themselves and want to, rather than waiting for a client to come and commission them, that they're proactive in wanting to go out and change things. And that can work very well until you have to get someone to pay for the projects. I'm just wondering, you're still as a practice, a business.
Yes. Yeah. But we actually have a lot of projects, but every project is like you don't really know what time is beginning and what time is finished. So we need to overlap a lot of things. So financially, there are some money get in, sometimes it's waiting. So it's magic. It's even myself, I don't understand how can we survive. But just like, we have a turn to say, like, you just touch the stone and, just step by step, you cross over the river. It means like, we just increase our salary a little bit every few months and test that we can stand it or not. And we try to increase a little bit and a little bit. So I don't really know how to, we basically it's manage and also not manage. And I have a strategy where I just open all of the contract to everybody. So all of our staff know the financial situation. So everybody need to struggle for themselves. So anyway, we are in the same boat. So it's a funny situation. But anyway, it's just like we survive well.
And so I'm just a bit conscious about time, and I'm sure you've got other things pressing on your day. Just interested maybe to start finishing off. We started at the beginning talking a bit about how well Taiwan has dealt with COVID. I'm talking from London, where everybody is still working from home. We can't travel, we can't go into the office. And that, I guess, got us thinking a little bit about your work, looking at nature and looking at inside and outside and more. I'm just wondering about what we can learn, really, whether architecture, and particularly your architecture, is perhaps a model for us in terms of what we can learn from a new world, really, this kind of post-COVID world.
Yes, I think as philosophically, we, Taiwan is a country. We never rule other people. We basically see a lot of pressure from everywhere, and we know how to we very, how to say that, carefully to how to say celebrate. We may very carefully to for the relationship when people think about your situation. So how to say that, it's just we taking care, we try to taking care of each other. That atmosphere is always, I think, is something very, I think it's a very fundamental character of Taiwanese people. So most of the people come to Taiwan feel we are friendly, and so I think it's helpful for when we're facing a disaster, because we, how to say that, get used, we kind of are born to consider other people. We know this is the way we eventually we could survive. So for example, when we wear the mask, and we do that not because we feel we necessary to do that. We just make people feel comfortable also doing that. So the whole
generosity, really.
Generosity. So you feel the light, especially every time when something when something comes, you feel it's more warm. You feel the whole society, everybody will try to help. And also, like in the architecture also, because we, as long as we went to the countryside, and I find out the it's good bay, it's a good place. And because we don't have much money, we usually have a very low budget. So why not to reduce the rely on the big system? So it means like the Taiwanese people know, well, the big power always trouble. We like to be many, many small pieces. So it means like we always, like field office, we, even though we could do something big, we usually make many, many little pieces as a cluster. It means like each room we have at least two doors could like to, you have a choices. And we try to avoid hierarchy because we don't want to be controlled. So our projects, you can feel like it's kind of the people go into the environment with a lot of choice, which means try not to be limited or influenced by the designer too much. So, which means like because we don't have the central system, so it's very good on in the SARS time. I find out all of our projects have survived very well. So, and the people, the administration are very easy to separate the people, not influence too much, everybody be independent, because I think deeply in my mind, to be independent is the very deep sentimentally requirement. So it means like, and also we find out the landscape, the nature is always our final, how to say, the final promise. It's like we, no matter how much difficulties we meet in the life, eventually if the landscape is always there, the, you know, the big nature is there, we always could come back and telling each other how much we already passed. And that's very, very deeply the, I think the Taiwanese people experienced. So from many, many generations, yeah.
That's lovely. That's a really nice positive spot to end on, I think. You've been listening to Architecture Masters. On the programme this week was Sen Yuan Kuang, founder of Field Office Architects. You can find out more about Sen Yuan and his work at architecturemasters.org, from where you can also subscribe to the programme and follow us on Twitter. You can send any comments, questions or suggestions by email to hello@architecturemasters.org. If you've enjoyed the programme, why not leave us a review or a rating with your podcast provider, as this really helps others to discover the programme. You've been listening to Architecture Masters. I'm Owen Wainhouse. Thank you for listening.